This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Detroit continues to be one of the nation's hotspots for COVID-19 cases and deaths. Michigan is now ranked as having the third highest number of COVID-related deaths in the country, despite the fact that the population of the state is only 10th. Grappling with a surge in critically ill patients, the lives of healthcare professionals are looking very different than they did just a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Charlene Babcock practices emergency medicine at Ascension St. John in Detroit. Dr. Babcock, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Could you give us a sense of what day-to-day operations look like at St. John Ascension's emergency room these days?
Well, we have seen a downturn in the volume of COVID patients coming in, which is a very positive sign and correlates with the flattening of the curve that we've also seen in graphs about how things are happening here in Michigan. But we still are seeing very sick patients. And I think I agree with the rest of the people that are experts in the area that are recommending people still stay at home and quarantine themselves at this time, because I think that that's really is helping to decrease the volume.
How has the outbreak of COVID-19 changed who comes into the ER right now?
You know, it has changed it a lot. We are not seeing as many patients with heart attacks and strokes come in, and a lot of us don't really know why. We hope that they're not staying at home and potentially having a stroke at home or potentially having a heart attack at home. We really don't know why, but we're not seeing the same type of volume that we had seen before COVID. And I think many people are very worried about going to the emergency room because of the potential exposure.
Are there aspects of the job that you feel like your ER was well equipped to handle as the infections began, and maybe some aspects in which the ER was less prepared?
Well, you know, when it first hit, I don't think anybody realized how quickly the volume would increase. And this has certainly been unprecedented in my lifetime. And I suspect we'll be hopefully the only time in my lifetime we'll see something like this. So clearly the volume ramped up extremely fast, and these patients were very, very ill. And as everybody knows, since this is a new and emerging infection, the ideal way to manage these cases was essentially unknown. And in many ways is still unknown for sure. There are hospitals doing randomized controlled trials with different medications, hydroxyquinone, for example, but the actual medication or the best way or the most ideal way to manage these cases is still unknown.
Are there some things you feel like you have learned in the past few weeks?
We have learned for sure that staying at home and making the population in general quarantine at their houses has definitely helped. We do know that some of our traditional mechanisms that we use to treat patients when they were intubated, meaning on life support, to improve oxygenation, we are now doing before we intubate them. And the classic example of that would be something called proning. Basically, when you lay on your back, which most people in the emergency department or when they're in bed often lay on their back, a lot of the fluid collects in the lower part of your lungs. But if you prone them or flip them over so they're laying on their stomach, then the fluid will shift towards the front part of the chest, and that frees up a lot more lung tissue in the back to receive oxygen and improve oxygenation of the blood. So even though in the past we would normally consider proning only in patients who were intubated, we are now doing it actually on patients before they get intubated in the hopes of preventing intubation.
At the start of the surge, you put a video up on YouTube that detailed a way to hook up more than one patient to a ventilator. And this was widely circulated. There were hospitals at capacity in New York and Italy that started using this method. Have we had to use this technique in Detroit?
To my knowledge, we have not. We've been fortunate enough to have enough ventilators at our hospital, and I believe in the other hospitals in the area. I have not heard of it being used here in Detroit. I have received some emails that it has been used in New York. And overseas, I know I had some contact with people overseas wanting to know how it was done and some information on it. I do know that there's a lot of different scientists looking at different ways to put more than one person on a ventilator. And in these different groups are kind of all spearheaded and communicating with each other. And I'm hopeful that they're going to come up with an even better way to do it than the one that I showed on the recording of the video.
May I ask, who taught you how to do that?
It actually started out with a research project with the PI, who is Dr. Greg Niemann. He was a resident at the time, and I was the research director. So he had a research project he was doing, and we worked it out, and we showed how you could do four people on one ventilator.
So that just came to your mind as a possible technique for making the more of less equipment when we started hearing about the spread of the virus?
So this research project was done way back in 2006. And at that time, I believe we were having issues with the bird flu at that time. Mm-hmm. And there was concern at that time about enough resources. And so Dr. Niemann had come up with a thought of, well, let's see if we can ventilate more than one person on a vent. I thought, that's a great research project. So we did it, and we showed that it was feasible. We did publish it, but it was a very small study, and it was only, you know, just using equipment, artificial lung, for example. But when we heard about people in Italy not having enough ventilators, my daughter actually called me, and she goes, Mom, remember you did that study? Don't you think that'd be helpful information? Maybe they can use it. And of course, it was a very, very primitive study because it was only done using equipment that, you know, you could find in the emergency department. But I thought at the time it still might be valuable information to show how it is feasible. And that was the whole purpose of the video, is to show mechanically wise, it could happen. You can ventilate more than one person on one ventilator. And that's why I did the video. But then after that, people ran with the idea. And like I said, I think there's going to be several improvements in that concept.
Are there ways in which the pandemic has changed things for you in your personal life?
It has. I mean, I you don't really appreciate how easy it is to go out and do stuff on a whim, just because you want to. And you know, the days that I'm not working, I'm pretty much at home. It has helped my housekeeping a little bit, because I'm definitely doing some spring cleaning. It has helped me appreciate the simple time that you have with family that you can't do anymore. I find myself FaceTiming a lot more with my grandchildren and my children. And in the past, I just go over there and see them, and I can't do that anymore. So I think it helps me appreciate the simple things like just getting together with your family that, you know, is limited now.
We've started to think about what would happen in Michigan in the case of a second wave of COVID-19 infections. Based on everything you've seen and what you've learned the first time around, what do you think would happen if there were a second surge, either this summer or maybe in the fall or winter?
So I think that there's a lot we don't know about a second surge, and I think that's really almost like a black hole. It's like a vacuum of information that we just don't have. If we look back at the pandemic Spanish flu that happened in 1918, there was a horrible second wave. But if you read the accounts of those, that second wave, they felt that it was related to a mutation in that virus. With this virus, we really don't have any idea to forecast or predict. This virus is a lot like the human cold virus, and so even understanding if people who get it have long-lasting immunity is something we don't know. So I can't really venture to guess what could happen if a second wave happened, except to say that I think we'd be more prepared in terms of already having accumulated necessary resources that maybe some places didn't have when the first wave hit. So I think that that will be one thing that will be beneficial if a second wave does happen. But I think I'm with everybody else in the state just hoping and praying that that won't happen.
Yeah. I think a lot of us have thought about hospitals as the place where the most serious cases are ending up right now. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier. Some people have thought twice about going into the hospital. Is there anything that you would want people to know about hospitals right now?
So the hospitals are very good right now at making sure that we put people together that are potentially infectious and that we protect the healthcare workers. If you do need to come to the hospital, I would urge you to do so. If you have an emergency, I would hate to think of somebody staying at home having a heart attack or a stroke or something serious happening and they're afraid to bring their children or themselves into the hospital, because other illnesses are still happening at the same rate. So I really think that people need to understand that the hospitals are very good at cohorting people that are possibly infectious and keeping people safe so that they don't catch an infection if they come in.
Have you seen anything changing with the availability of protective gear?
At our particular hospital, we have protective gear. I think they're currently trying different types of gears because the same brand, for example, may not be available all the time. So our hospital is very good about making sure that whatever gear we're using, it's tested for each individual to make sure that it will indeed protect them. We really haven't seen a lot of healthcare workers get sick. And I think it's because people are being very cautious and making sure that people do have the correct PPE that they need. I hope that continues.
What's getting you through the days right now?
What's getting us through that? When I'm working, it's just seeing the patients and making sure that we are really careful about not touching our face and simple things like rubbing your eyes. You don't want to do that. So simple things like that, you have to be very cognizant of and make sure that you are super hyper acute about it. So when I'm working, I'm mostly focusing on taking care of the patients and making sure everybody is safe and everybody's doing proper PPE. When I'm home, it's a little bit different. I've pulled out some books. I've decided to read some stuff that I haven't had a chance to read in a while. And then I try to stay in touch with my family as much as I can.
Dr. Babcock, we really appreciate the work you're doing right now. Thanks for taking a couple minutes out of your day to talk to us.
Thank you very much for having me, and please be safe.